Live from Utrecht, this is the Van Wittem Shortenado.
Yes, podcast.
So, I'm very happy we're not actually doing this live.
Yeah, indeed.
I just killed my laptop, apparently, it seemed like.
You may have killed it.
We were halfway recording this podcast, and then I dropped a glass of water on my laptop, and now it's not working anymore at all.
Which means we're not sure if the first half of this recording was there or not, so we're just going to do it again.
Let's start over.
So this better be awesome.
We're doing great. We're never going to beat what we did, but that was...
That was an amazing podcast. Maybe one day we'll sell... maybe one day we're going to sell it on DVD, that first 15 minutes, you know, with manually signed, and you can buy it, but...
If we ever recover my hard drive...
It should be possible.
All right. Yeah. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Still in
I'm still slightly in shock, but I think I'll... I'm fine. We can do this podcast now.
I think so. And we've practiced this podcast 3 or 4 times now, so
yeah,
I think...
So we moved inside this time.
Yep.
We were getting a lot of complaints for the background noise, I guess, rightfully so. We were inside because of Corona. That was sort of the reason we were inside, right?
We were outside because of Corona.
That's what I mean.
Exactly. We wanted to be in the fresh air. Now we are risking our lives, although the windows are open. And
risking our lives for you, dear listener.
That's right.
So, you better enjoy.
Indeed. Okay.
We're going to discuss Taproot today. We're going to dive head first into technical topics, I guess. Well, it's the second episode, but Taproot is one of the biggest technical projects in development today for Bitcoin. This week, there was a lot of discussion about Taproot activation. How are we going to activate this thing, if we're going to activate it?
Mm-hmm.
We're not actually going to get into that this episode. This episode, we're going to get into Taproot itself first. So what is it? Why is it interesting? What does it do? I wrote about Taproot myself at one point for Bitcoin Magazine. When I wrote about Taproot, I sort of cut it into several pieces to make it sort of easy to understand, I think.
Yep.
At least it seemed to sort of work. People seemed to like that article. So we're going to do something similar for this podcast. We're sort of going to cut Taproot into a couple of different parts, and then hopefully that will make it clear why it works as a whole.
All right.
Right? Are you good to go?
I'm ready. What's part one?
Part one is pay to script hash.
Okay.
P2SH, which was itself a protocol upgrade, which activated on Bitcoin. I'm pretty sure it was 2012. So let's get into what it is. Do you want to take a lead?
Yes, I will. Okay, so when you want to receive Bitcoin, you tell the other person how to send that Bitcoin, and you do that by adding some constraints.
Right, which sounds like a bad thing.
But it's not. It's an awesome thing. Constraints are great. So basically, people tend to think about a wallet, and it's not really a well-chosen word. Because it's like a wallet, but everybody can touch whatever's inside your wallet. And so the constraint that people tend to add is only I can spend these coins.
Right.
Which
or to be more precise, these coins can only be spent if the transaction includes a signature that's made with this specific public key.
Right. So what you do is you tell the other person, here's my public key or the hash of the public key, and put that on the blockchain with the note on it that only the owner of that public key can spend it. And that's what you mean by sending to me. So you're not really sending me a file or anything. You're just publishing something on the blockchain that says whoever has this public key can now spend these coins. And that happens to be the recipient's public key.
Right. So that's a very common type of constraint.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of other types of constraints, for example.
Right. Because this constraint is expressed as a script. And a script can say a lot of different things. It could also say, well, I can spend this, but my mom also needs to sign it. But after 35 years, maybe I can sign it alone.
Yeah, so it's possible to send bitcoins to someone, or to put it differently, to receive bitcoins, and do this under certain constraints, and this can be multiple constraints.
Yes.
So either me and my mom have to sign it, or I can send it alone after 35 years,
yep.
Or my mom can sign it alone, can spend it alone if she has some sort of secret
Yep.
You know, which I could put in my will, or I'm just sort of thinking out loud here. But you can have several different constraints. Yep. And if you want to spend the money, you only need to fulfill one of these constraints. And you can sort of pick one, and that's the one you publish.
Yeah.
That's the one that the blockchain and the world will recognize as all right.
Right.
That's the one it's using out of several that it could have used.
Yeah. But to go back to why script hash, because it's pay to script hash, not pay to script. If I want to receive coins from you, I would have to tell you exactly what script to use. And it's kind of weird because now I'm telling you how I want to spend my coins. And if this was put in an address, it'd be a very long address.
Yes, and not only how you want to spend your coins, but all the different ways in which your coins could potentially be spent, even if you don't use them.
Yes. But and so the idea is now instead of sending to an to the script, you send to the hash of the script. So because you want money from me, you're giving me the hash of your script, which is always the same length and happens to be the same length of a normal address. So the address will start with a 3 rather than a 1, but otherwise it looks kind of the same. And for you, you just copy-paste it, put it in your Bitcoin wallet, send money to it, and it works. Now, when I want to spend that money, now I need to reveal the actual script. But that's my wallet that has to do that, so I don't have to bother anyone else with the complexity of remembering what the script was and correctly sending to it.
Yes. Yeah, I was skipping ahead one step just now. But yeah, that's the point we're trying to explain here, is that if you receive money, you only got to share a hash. The person that's sending you doesn't need to care what this hash actually hides.
Right.
And then only when you spend the coins do you need to reveal the different ways in which you could have spent it, or the single way in which you could have spent it, whatever.
And so from a privacy point of view, that's much better than immediately putting the script on the chain. But it is still unfortunate that when you're spending, you have to reveal all these other options, because maybe I'd rather not reveal the world what my backup plan was.
Right. That's the step I was sort of skipping ahead to, which is, yes, if you are spending the coins alone after 35 years, then their whole world doesn't need to know that you could have also spent it with your mom. Like, why do they need to know that? There's no reason for them to know.
And much more importantly, if I spent it with my mom, the whole world should not have known that they could have, you know, waited 35 years and stolen it.
By kidnapping you or something.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay, so the point is, anyways, like, regardless of specific examples, the point is, once you spend money, you should only have to reveal the solution you're using, not all of the other options.
Okay, now, if only there was a way to do that.
If only, sure.
Aaron.
Wouldn't that be great?
Tell us about this amazing invention.
So, for the past couple of years, this has been in the works for a couple of years. You want to get to MAST, right?
Exactly.
Yes, we want to get to MAST. So, for a couple of years, there was this idea called MAST, which stands for Merkleized Abstract Syntax Tree.
That's right. Nice. Merkleized Abstract Syntax Tree.
Perfect. This is essentially a Merkle tree of hashes, and therefore of the different ways to spend Bitcoin, so of the scripts. So a Merkle tree, are you going to explain it or should I?
I'll explain it once and then you'll correct my explanation, because it's kind of hard to wrap your head around it. But the idea is that it's basically just, you could see it as a list. There might be 8 conditions, but instead of, you don't want to show all 8 of those conditions. So what you do is you group them in a tree. You put, 8 of them at the bottom. Then you put each of them, you combine them. So then you have 4. And each of those 4, you combine them. So you have 2. And then you combine those 2 and you have 1. So that's your pyramid.
Yes, and by combine, you mean hash.
You hash,
so
exactly.
You have hashes already of the scripts, of the solutions to, of the conditions to spend your coins. These are hashed. And then you bundle each of the 8 hashes in this example into couples. So now you have 4 couples of hashes. Yep. And these are themselves hashed. So now you have 4 hashes.
Yep.
These are coupled, so, and then they are hashed, so then you have 2 hashes, and these are coupled and hashed, they're coupled, it's 2 left, so that's 1 couple. You hash them, and then you have 1 hash left. And this is the hash you share, and that's where the coins are spent to.
Right.
So in this case, the coins are sort of spent to this hash tree, the Merkle tree.
Yeah, and basically what you do is when you want to spend it, you say, this is the part of the tree that I want to spend, which could just be a number, and then you give... you give that script, plus you give the neighbor script, because there's always, they come in pairs, and you give a hash of every other point in the tree. So if the tree is 4 high, you need to give 4 hashes and a script, which is a lot less than all 8 of them. and you keep everything else secret. So you still prove that you didn't change the script.
Yeah.
Now, Merkle trees are very common, of course. They're used in blocks too for the blocks themselves. They were used for file sharing, BitTorrent, all those sort of things. They all have these little chunks, and you can just ask for one chunk, and you know for sure that the chunk is actually part of the original file and not some made-up thing.
Yeah. So if I want to simplify that by quite a bit, then it just means you only reveal the script you care about. You only reveal the scripts that you're using to spend the coins.
Yep.
The rest remains hashed. And just add some extra data to prove that it was in that tree somewhere.
Yeah, and it scales very nicely. So you could have, you know, millions of scripts, potential scripts. But in order to reveal any one of those millions, you don't need to reveal a lot of extra data. So
would it literally scale that well, millions? Would that be possible?
I don't know what there's probably a limit to it, but a million is 2 to the power of 20.
Hmm.
So that's 20 layers of the roughly.
Right.
So that's still big because you'd have to reveal 20 times 32 bytes, I think.
That's doable.
So that's 600 bytes. So you probably don't want to have millions of options. But yeah, it's not too bad.
Is it doable or not?
I don't know. you'd have to like ask me that before the podcast and I can look up the answer. Or we could pause again and break another computer and we'll be back.
Fair enough. Anyways, you can hide a lot of...
you can hide a lot of
conditions in there, so it's good for privacy, like we mentioned. And so, yeah, the other thing you're mentioning now is it's good for scale as well, because you don't need to include all of the possible scripts into the blockchain. The blockchain is a scarce resource, costs a lot of fees to include all of that. Even if you're only including it when spending, you still got to pay all of these fees.
Yep.
With something like Mast, you can keep the vast majority of it hidden, makes it much cheaper as well as private.
Great, and this could have just been another opcode, so another instruction in the script, which has been debated for quite a while, but in comes magic.
Just wouldn't it be great if we could hide that we're even using Mast itself?
Exactly, because there is a so-called, an ultimate condition, which is that everybody agrees. So if everybody agrees, everybody signs, you don't have to reveal that there was a script.
Yeah, so let's take the example.
But how would you do that?
Okay, yeah. So let's take the example we just had where you're receiving coins and it's you and your mom, but after 35 years, you can spend it on your own.
Right.
Or she can spend it if she has some sort of secret that you've put in your will. I don't know, that was something I just made up.
Yeah.
This means that in this smart contract, because that's essentially what we have here, that's what it's called. There is this option where your mom and, or was it my mom or your mom?
Sorry. Whatever. Yeah. Both are moms.
Your mom and yourself are in agreement and both of you agree, just let's spend this money so you don't have to wait 35 years and you don't have to include the secret. In most smart contracts, there's almost always, there is or should be this condition where, okay, everyone who's involved with this smart contract just agrees that let's spend the money.
That's right.
That's almost always the case, or it should be the case.
Almost always, yeah.
Right. So are we skipping?
So it would be nice if there was a way to express that, right? It would be nice if you could just not show any of these scripts, not show a whole tree, but just show a signature. And the way you could do that is by tweaking an existing, a public key. So instead of saying send this to my public key, you roughly would say send this to my public key plus my mom's public key plus this Mast key. That's kind of the idea is that you can tweak keys. And it's very oversimplified because cryptography is very subtle. But in theory, you can add up keys and then you can also add up signatures. And it kind of looks to the outside world as if it's just a regular signature. And so you can hide a bunch of stuff in there. The problem, however, is that in an ideal world, you can just add these signatures. But in practice, we have this quite a difficult signature algorithm called ECDSA. And
Bitcoin.
Yes. And there was something before that, which is called Schnorr. And
Schnorr signatures.
Yes. And Mr. Schnorr is a German professor, I believe, who invented a really nice way to do digital signatures. Unfortunately, he patented it. And so nobody wanted to use it. And so a bunch of lawyers, basically, together with engineers and cryptographers, tried to figure out if there was a way to maim Schnorr's algorithm so far that it would legally not fall under the patent, but still kind of work. And that is what is ECDSA. And that got really standardized. You know, the NSA published some nice numbers for it. And OpenSSL, the cryptographic library that many programs use, which is also maintained, I think, by just one person, it used that. And so when Satoshi, probably when he was working on Bitcoin, he had to pick a curve, a cryptographic curve, and he just picked something from OpenSSL, namely ECDSA, and not Schnorr, because he then, first of all, he knew it was patented, or maybe just the patent maybe just ran out. But second, there was just no implementation of it. And it's much easier to just use a library, because you're writing your own cryptography is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And whatever this massive team was that Satoshi supposedly had did not have a cryptographer that could do that. So
the nice thing about Schnorr, I guess, if I would put it in one sentence, is that you can perform math on it.
Yeah, you can add signatures in Schnorr trivially. Whereas with ECDSA, because of this maiming that they did to get around the patent, you can kind of add signatures if you spend a lot of time and, you know, you're very careful. But well, it's very complicated.
If you simplify it a lot, I would say, or this is sort of how it was explained to me, I think, at some point, simplified a lot. Or maybe I just made this up at some point. That's also possible. Anyways, the sort of simplified example is that a public key plus one would correspond to a private key plus one.
Exactly.
Like a signature plus one. Like, you can do math stuffy thingies with it.
Yes.
And then it still makes sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, a public key plus another public key. And then if you,
still a valid public
if you take
key
a
and it can be combined with the private key plus the private key. Or,
exactly. And the signatures can be added.
Sort of.
All of it can be added. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so
not with ECDSA. Or at least not easily with ECDSA,
yes,
but
right.
with Schnorr it still works.
Bitcoin developers have been wanting to add Schnorr to the protocol anyways. Like,
yeah.
This was a project even before Taproot was thought of. People were thinking of adding Schnorr because you can do all sort of cool stuff with it.
Yeah.
And then at some point, Greg Maxwell, the former Bitcoin Core developer, I guess we'll call
him. He's still a Bitcoin Core developer. He still reviews
Is he still
code.
Contributing?
Yeah, yeah. He mostly reviews code, but yeah.
What was that?
He mostly reviews code, but he's
right,
there.
Okay, well, that's definitely a contributor then. I thought he was sort of...
No, he's not loud on Twitter, because he's not on Twitter. But that doesn't mean he's not there.
No, I thought he kind of retired, or he was just lurking on IRC or something. Anyways,
no,
that's...
No, he's there.
But he came up with this idea to use Schnorr in this very clever way in combination with MAST, and that brings us Taproot.
Yes.
Right?
So basically, because you can add anything to a public key, you can also add a script to a public key, because a script is essentially just a number, and a private key is essentially just a number. So you can just add numbers.
Well, or yeah, or hash.
Well, a hash is a number too.
Root.
And a Merkle root is also just a number.
Yes.
In fact, everything is a number, but yeah.
In Bitcoin, it definitely is. So I just explain what's cool about this?
Yeah, so...
So let's say we've been taking this example with me and my mom, or
yeah.
you and your mom. Either way, someone and his mom.
Yeah. Well, let's simplify that example, because that's multi-signature. Let's just say it's just you. Or if you forgot your own key, you can use some sort of secret, which is a very bad idea. But let's say you would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you... So your script, your MAST, would contain two options. Mm-hmm. Either it's you, your signature, or it's this secret piece of information that you wrote down somewhere else
mm-hmm.
without a signature. Like I said, do not do this, but imagine it was that.
Sure.
If you know your key, if you still have your private key, it's kind of a shame to reveal the fact that you could have revealed the secret number.
Right.
And so what you can do now is, in Taproot, thanks to Schnorr, you can actually take this MAST and hide it inside your public key. And then when you're signing the actual transaction, you are just signing a public key, and you're not even revealing the fact that there is a Taproot out there. You're basically just ignoring it, because you've added you just add the hash to your private key,
yes.
and you've added the hash to the public key, and nobody needs to know.
Yes, for the outside world, they don't see any difference between the tweaked public key and
right.
the original public key. So if you've tweaked your public key with this MAST structure, it looks the same to the rest of the world.
Exactly. If you do want to use this MAST structure, what you do is, instead of revealing the tweaked key, you reveal the original key, and you reveal the script. one of them,
which you use to tweak.
Yes, and therefore, you know, the person verifying it can take that script, calculate the hash, calculate the other hash, add it up to the public key. Now they know they can see that that's the tweak public key, and they can see that the signature is valid for the whole thing. So it's kind of nice. You can choose to not reveal anything, not even the tree itself,
mm-hmm.
or you can reveal any part of the tree.
Yes.
So this is much better. It's also more space efficient, but it also means that if you're sending coins to somebody, it doesn't matter if you are sending to a single person with just one key, or some super complicated exchange,
right.
or some other condition. It all looks the same.
Or me and my mom.
Yes.
I do want to give that example, because just for extra clarity, like if I would accept Bitcoin with my mother with this using this trick, then yeah. we would combine our public keys.
Yes.
And then we would also have a mass structure that says, okay, I can, you know, which includes I can spend it after 35 years and my mom can spend it with the secret number. That's all in the mass structure.
Yes.
Right? So, and we have the Merkle route for that.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to spend the coin, we both agree. So we just both sign, combine the signature, and tweak it with this masked Merkle route.
Yeah.
And therefore, what we publish to the outside world just looks like a regular signature, spending the regular public key, which was always public, and
right.
the rest of the world will just think, okay, well, that makes total sense, we'll accept that. Now, if my mom can't sign for whatever reason, or if I can't sign for whatever reason and she has that secret,
mm-hmm.
then let's take the example where my mom can't sign for some reason, and 5 years pass. At that point, I reveal that it was actually a tweaked public key.
Yep.
I reveal the tweak. I show the world, look, this hash, this mask structure was hidden under this hash, which I used to tweak.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the world can look at that and see, yep, that adds up. The math makes total sense. That was what you were always doing. We just
mm-hmm.
never were able to see it. And yep, 35 years have passed. So you're totally allowed to spend this money now on your own.
Exactly. And so that condition is only revealed if you actually use it. And otherwise, it would have forever been a secret unless
yeah.
somebody hacked your wallet.
Exactly. So as long
yeah.
as my mom is able to sign and I'm able to sign, no one ever needs to know that there were other ways to spend this coin. So that's great for privacy, fungibility.
Yeah. And so this tweaking, this ability to hide is Schnorr. And the fact that you can have multiple conditions and only reveal one of those conditions, that is masked.
Yeah.
But this magic is combined, like Captain Planet, and now you can do all these things. So, but this is why
yeah,
Taproot
why
is a fairly large proposal.
What's that sentence?
It was Earth, Wind, Fire, blah blah blah. Captain Planet. So combining
so what
all
people
this.
Use this for? Is that the next point, or did we forget something?
So people can use this for the complicated scenarios we described.
Mm-hmm.
Is there
anything new that's possible now?
Well, a couple of things. One is you can do multi-signatures without script, because you can actually just combine multiple signatures.
Right.
But there's some protocols for that.
Different trees, different parts of the tree which allows different people to. Split.
No, not even the tree. Even without using the mass structure, the taproot itself can be one signature, but it can also be a multisig, but just an N of N multisig. Because
okay,
there's just general math
right.
that you can use to combine signatures. And that was sort of possible. It's called threshold signatures in ECDSA. But there's lots of papers about it, and it's all very complicated. But with Schnorr, it should be slightly easier. And by
so
easier, I mean there's still only five people on the planet who can understand the math, but
so
they can write tools.
Collaborative spend, that's what we're calling it, right?
Yeah.
That can have a sort of multisig N of M kind of?
So the easiest, I think, there's a proposal called Music,
mm-hmm.
which does, what it does is it adds the signatures.
M-U-S-I-G.
Exactly.
It combines
signatures.
M-U-S-I-C.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on.
So to the outside world, it will look like a regular signature. It just looks like a regular public key and a regular signature, but really it's a combination of public keys that are then all signing, and you can add them up.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, I believe you can also do threshold things with that that will still look like a single signature and a single public key, but actually it's two out of three signatures. And that stuff is, you don't have to bake it into the protocol. So as long as you support Schnorr, then somebody can come up with a way to combine these signatures, and to the outside world, it will just look the same. So that's not actually part of the protocol, but that math it still needs a lot of verification and people need to make tools around it. But Taproot enables that sort of stuff.
Right. But so you what I really like about Taproot is how it makes Lightning more private. Like opening and closing channels, all that stuff just looks like regular transactions.
Yes.
There's no way to tell if people are using Lightning at all, right?
Correct, because Lightning, again, is an example of usually both parties agree, and they both sides of the channel agree in an operation, and for the rest of the world, it will just look like a normal transaction.
Right.
But if they disagree, there's all these additional timeout conditions, and those can be nicely hidden inside the Taproot.
Right.
So that's very nice. And the other benefit is that if you have a payment on Lightning, it goes from hop to hop to hop. Right now, you're revealing a pre-image, which is just something that you hash. And that thing is the same for every hop. So somebody who can see all the nodes can see that one payment belongs to the same
person. Or if you're like a spy on a route, on different parts of the route, you can sort of connect that this was the same
payment, right? And then there are some exploits based on that, actually. So,
that would be harder now.
That would be more difficult because you can, instead of using a pre-image and a hash, you just use key, essentially public keys and private keys.
Mm-hmm.
So you would just everything would just be points on the elliptic curve that you're adding up.
Right.
So and then every point along the route can have a can tweak the number slightly differently. So to an outside observer that does not know the private keys, they just look like random numbers. Now they can still correlate the amounts, you know. So there's still some problems remaining.
Sure.
But it's again it's an increase in privacy, which is very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think one point I would say about Taproot is that it seems to me at least, but I'm probably going to be proven wrong on this, it seems to me like all of the things we want to do with Taproot are technically possible already. It's just right now it's just not very privacy friendly or it costs a lot of data.
Some things are not technically possible.
Yeah, I like
because
that.
A 16, I think the maximum for multisig is 15 right now.
Right.
So you can do infinitely large multisigs. Either by adding these signatures, as I just described, but also just by making a very large tree, and you just put all the combinations in.
Right.
So you can, you can strictly do more.
Yeah.
But I would also say that, for most people, you might not notice the difference, except your privacy is just going to be slightly better.
Yeah.
And you know, as these advanced options come along, you'll just use them, but you won't notice them. So I agree, it's not as dramatic. You know, SegWit, when it was launched, SegWit 0, by the way, because SegWit is versioned. Mm. Taproot is SegWit 1, or uses SegWit 1.
Mm.
When that came along, it enabled Lightning, because Lightning was an absolute pain in the ass to do without SegWit. There were all these papers with trusted hardware modules and all sorts of weird stuff. It was really hard. And there came SegWit, and now we have Lightning. Now, Taproot, again, improves things about Lightning. There's other software proposals that can improve things about Lightning. And those improvements should not be trivialized, because I think when Lightning gets, if it gets real big and is under attack all the time, some of these things that we can currently ignore can't be ignored. And then it's very nice to have a bigger toolbox that can, you know, deal with all these problems.
Is Taproot technically done, ready? Do you know this? Is it still a work in progress, or is it at this point sort of?
Well, if you're saying that people are discussing deployment options, then I guess it's further along. In my own work reviewing Bitcoin Core stuff, I have not yet reviewed a pull request that does any of the Taproot stuff. I know that there is one. I don't know if it's ready to review yet or whether it's still in like draft. We're basically making a lot of changes to the wallet itself. We've been almost completely rewriting it with a few
Bitcoin Core wallet.
Yes, with a couple of people to make it much more flexible. And that flexibility is a prerequisite for being able to add something as like Taproot. Because what happened with SegWit is it was added to the blockchain, but the Core wallet was not able to properly use SegWit for I think at least a year after SegWit was released, which is kind of embarrassing. So hopefully this time the wallet will just be completely ready for all the magic, and then we just have to wait for the soft fork to activate.
Right.
So how far it is, I don't know. I have not followed all the mailing lists in detail.
Yeah.
I went to a workshop in London by Optech in February, where we did a whole day of going through the protocol and all the little script things and signatures and how that all works, which was super useful. They have a Python workbook online too. I recommend reading it if you want to learn. And they've done review clubs where lots of people looked at it. But after that, I have kind of not paid as much attention to it, partially because there was this little virus thing that distracted everybody, partially because it's a huge thing. So for my own review habits, I find it easier to review smaller things yeah. as they come in, and they haven't been coming in yet. I'm not sure how to handle that.
And then the next question is how it's going to be activated, yep. which we'll discuss.
Maybe next week.
Maybe the next episode.
Maybe another time.
No promises. We'll see.
Is this when you do the sign-off?
I think this is the part where you do the sign-off. This was episode 2.
Of the Van Weerdem Shores NATO podcast. Thank you for listening.
There you go.